hello, and thank you for tuning in to the very first episode of Lifeguard IT, a podcast about diving into the deep end of enterprise IT. Brought to you by Lakeside Software.
An industry leader in workspace analytics, Lakeside Software has been helping organizations improve their end-user experience for over 20 years. Our unique method of endpoint data collection helps enable business productivity by providing you with key insights into your users, the business processes that encompass their jobs, and the technologies they use to get work done. From continuously monitoring your end users' experiences to planning for your next transformation project, Lakeside's analytics suite helps you optimize your environment every step of the way.
Welcome to Lifeguard IT. I'm Heather Bicknell. I'm here with my co-host, Linda Zhao. Before we start things off, I feel like we need to clear the air a little bit. Linda, have you ever been a lifeguard?
I have not, but I used to swim a lot when I was younger, so I took a really light lifeguarding course, so I can basically lift a 50-pound brick out of the deep end of the pool. Shocker, I know. So basically, I can rescue a small dog.
Oh, interesting. Do you put that on your resume? I feel like...
Oh, definitely. Like, can rescue Pomerania, but no bigger.
Like, suburban pool parties.
Right.
I'll save your dogs. I've also never been a lifeguard, so I hope no one out there was hoping to learn about how to lifeguard it. Didn't seem like there really is any lifeguarding podcasts out there. I hope you find what you're looking for. For everyone else, thanks for joining us today. For our first episode, we're going to talk about Windows 10 migration. So whatever state you're in, if you haven't transitioned at all yet, if you're still on Windows 7, or if you're in the middle of moving your users, you know, Windows 10 has been out for a couple years now, so I feel like we've learned a few things and we can share, you know, what have we learned and how can we apply that knowledge to transform smarter. But first, we're going to cover a bit of lighthearted news. If you're on Twitter, if you're, if you're out there at all, you probably heard, which is the quote-unquote end of Microsoft Paint. There was a big backlash to that. So Linda, could you fill us in on that story?
Yeah, so what happened is that Microsoft replaced Paint with Paint 3D. And this isn't to be mistaken that Paint 3D is an update. It's its own application. But what happened is that people were so passionate for Paint that they decided to bring it back and they put it in their app store. So what this means is that you have to go seek it out. It's still free, but it won't be automatically installed on your system.
Yeah, there were a lot of like mainstream articles about the end of Paint and everyone was having like all these sentimental reactions to it. So I'm curious, Linda, if you have any like memories involving Paint.
I personally do not. I didn't even know they were taking it off the market. So it's interesting to me that all of a sudden these people just came out of the woodworks like, oh my God, we need this application.
And then promptly go back to never using it again.
Exactly. But
at least we have the comfort of knowing it's out there, right?
Exactly.
A different Microsoft product that I know we both interacted with because it's on our systems at work is Windows 10. Do you also use it at home? And what do you think about it versus other operating systems?
So I do use it at home. As a past IT admin, I knew when they updated to Windows 8, it was hot and fresh with along with the tablets that they were bringing out. So it seemed very oriented towards like tablets, touchscreen laptops, anyone without those things, they were very confused. And they're like, where did my desktop go? Because it wasn't what they were used to.
Yeah, so, that was me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You are not alone. So what happened is that when they updated to Windows 10, it definitely feels more like a Windows 7 with a little bit of Windows 8. And I think they're heading in the right direction for users.
Yeah, Windows 10 actually feels like a lot of, you know, all the Windows that I've personally interacted with in the past. I wasn't really a Windows 8 user. You know, I interacted with it on, like, my boyfriend's system, but I usually had to, like, ask him where to find things and never really got used to it because I wasn't really exposed. But I haven't really used Windows seriously probably since, like, the days of XP when I was, you know, a student.
Using Paint, of course.
Yeah, for all of my projects. They looked really professional. No, but yeah, it seems pretty intuitive to me as someone who grew up on Windows and Mac. So I don't really have any major concerns about the operating system, I guess. It feels pretty natural to me. The one thing I don't really have a hang of right now is, you know, I can use Cortana on my desktop. Like, it is there. She wants to be spoken to, but I just don't have anything to ask her. I don't know, you know, on what occasions do you use Cortana to like optimize your desktop experience.
Right. I definitely don't like talking to any inanimate objects, so I don't even use Siri. Like, I turned off everything. I'm just way too awkward for this stage in technology, so.
I feel like I'll do it in private, but yeah, if I'm in a group of people, I'm not going to be the one, like, Cortana, launch Microsoft Word.
Right, you right. Know? I feel like if you're talking to your device, you're, like, announcing it to everyone what you're doing, and then it, like, takes away from, like, having all those buttons. But that's just me.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to our main topic of discussion today, which is Windows 10 adoption at the enterprise level. Here with us to talk about that is Ben Murphy, who is the Director of Applied Engineering at Lakeside. Ben, thanks for joining us. Would you walk us through the current state of Windows 10 adoption at the enterprise level?
I'll tell you what, I would be more than happy to do that. So the Windows 10 adoption rate is something that I've been quite interested in, having lived through a few iterations of this kind of thing. And what's probably most interesting to me is watching the rapidity of this versus what we even saw with Windows 7. I think there's a very serious enterprise appetite for a lot of the features that come with Windows 10. Definitely more so than we saw for Windows 8, that's for sure. But I think that by and large, people are kind of realizing the necessity of it. I think a lot of recent events have kind of forced home the idea that it's really important to have upgrades pushed out and managed by someone who's not necessarily IT, and to have a rapidity of response, especially with all of these ransomware attacks and things like that. So a lot of people are biting on that.
Yeah, it's definitely been a lot of security discussion with the Windows 10 updates.
So you said you've been through a couple cycles of these. Do you have any pro tips for anyone that might be in the middle of migration or thinking about it?
Pro tip, understand what you've got in your environment. That's probably the key thing. I think fundamentally this is very similar in thrust, even to if we harken back to the XP to 7 days, although not quite as drastic in terms of the application estate, and there are a lot of legacy problems with that. Key is to understand what your users do. Understand what applications they interact with on a day-to-day basis and understand the state of their hardware. Really, that gives you a pretty solid grasp on what your strategy should be. I also would say that this is an ideal opportunity to take place in some kind of a software rationalization exercise. Always is a good opportunity to try and scrub out a lot of applications that really are underutilized. And that's a very common case in a lot of environments. We find that really, there's a tremendous amount of software out there in the environment that is unused for most customers. Other thing that's really important is maybe think about other solution stacks that you could take advantage of, virtualization as an option. There are a lot of options for what you can do with Windows 10 and with this opportunity to try to transition people into something that kind of fits their work style a little bit better. I think one of the really key things that people are looking for, especially, is the opportunity to leverage more platforms as a service or more services that are delivered through some kind of a service provider. Software as a service is a great example of that. People really love the Office 365 ecosystem. It's something that I think people really think is the way to go forward because, to be honest with you, no one likes managing their own servers. I think that kind of goes without saying.
Yeah, Microsoft's definitely embraced that. Introducing Windows 10 is, you know, the future Windows as a service model, which if you're not familiar, Microsoft has reformulated how Windows gets delivered. So basically, instead of every few years, you have this like major OS upgrade, and you have to kind of like learn the new quirks of an operating system. Instead, Windows 10 is designed to get you smaller updates that will feel more natural and keep evolving the operating system with the users. So there's not that like hard refresh feeling. Like when people went from 7 to 8, it was just this huge jump and people just couldn't make it. But with Windows 10, the smaller updates, hopefully Windows won't have that same problem. So along with Windows as a service, Microsoft has recently introduced Microsoft 365, which is an option for upgrading your OS and to Office 365 at the same time.
Yeah, it just went live not too long ago, right?
Yeah, just at the start of August, you can now, you know, contact sales about purchasing that. There are business and enterprise versions of that, but the enterprise version basically replaces something that they already had, which was called Secure Productive Enterprise. Really rolls off the tongue, which included which included Office 365, Windows 10, and Microsoft's Enterprise Mobility and Security. So, you know, people now have options. You know, you can update your users all at once. with their OS and Office with Microsoft 365, or you can do them separately and potentially save some money with some lower licensing options. But do you have a sense of what would be right for most people or how to make that call for your business?
Well, I think the key is something you touched on right there, which is evaluation of the costs. One of the things that I mentioned earlier on is the idea of trying to take stock of what people do on a day-to-day basis, what kind of activities people get up to. And really, I think that's got to be at the heart of any of these decisions. So as I understand the Microsoft licensing levels, effectively for the enterprise, you've got E1, which is a fairly stripped down version. Basically, it's the web-based Office tools. And then, of course, you've got Outlook, email, and things like that. And then there's E3, which introduces the actual client tools, so the actual like WinWord.exe, the actual installable software. And then, of course, there's E5, which introduces some of the more advanced tools. Actually, a lot of that has to do with PSTN conferencing and some of the other things. But core idea is this. Could be really expensive to provision E3 and E5 for everybody. And I can't imagine that it's going to get cheaper for your average company to do Microsoft as a service and bundle in E3, E5 with their actual OS licensing. So what I would say is it probably makes just as much sense as anything to evaluate what people are actually doing today. How are they being productive? What apps are they using? Get a strong sense of it. Really, an assessment is kind of a key part of that. And then figure out what you can do in order to optimize the licensing to try and save some costs. So rather than just kind of blanket giving everyone the same thing, understand, do I have some users that really don't necessarily need the full clients for things?
And on top of that, you know, from the hardware side, as some unfortunate people just experienced with when they had the Intel Atom processors in their system, some consumers who had been encouraged by Microsoft to update to Windows 10 were excluded from the latest Creators update because their processors, Microsoft came out and said, were no longer supported. So those people, you know, will receive no new feature updates from Microsoft. And, you know, now there's this question of how do I know if there's something in my system where, you know, the original manufacturer no longer supports it, but I might not know it's out of date and I've been using Windows 10 for a while and I don't know there's a problem. Like, how can people, do we think this is going to really affect at the enterprise level, or what are strategies for avoiding being hit by that?
Well, I think that it's kind of an interesting topic because I like the 1-2 punch from Microsoft there of, oh, well, you've got to get this, and right, the constant nagging, and then, whoops, oh, yeah, that turns
that's
out.
That's where all the news stories kind of came out about it, like, oh, this is really fair.
Yeah. But the idea here is that a lot of factors dictate whether or not you can really count on consistent updates, especially with this shift in the model. So I absolutely think that we are at risk of seeing some additional systems end up getting dropped from Microsoft. I would think back to Mac OS, for example, or the early days of OS X, back when we were changing the processor architecture over from PowerPC over into the new Intel processor. I mean, that effectively doomed the older legacy systems to inevitably kind of age out of support. And I think that with Windows 10 and the idea that it's kind of the last operating system Microsoft is going to release, you're going to end up in this kind of a situation again. Now, to the direct question, I don't think that Atom processors ever had much of a real enterprise play to start off with, but I do, on the other hand, think that there is a very solid chance that you may see this kind of thing happen in the future, especially as processors start to really age, if Windows 10 really kind of makes it for the long haul, as we kind of anticipate that it will.
Yeah, so to go off of your previous point with asset optimization and optimizing all those like Word applications, it's probably another thing to consider is to optimize your hardware and to know what you have out there and what you're working with, so you can be more aware of when these updates happen and how to control that and not to be left in the dust.
Yeah, I mean, even with the Intel processors, you know, the most recent example, if you knew, okay, well, I wasn't able to anticipate that those people aren't going to be able to be updated, but I can at least, you know, use my data, find out, was anyone on any of those processors? And then you can go, you know, find those systems, update them, and make sure you're not at any security risk for the future.
Yeah, I think that's a very reasonable point. I think maintaining that visibility is absolutely critical because from there, you have the ability to act on things very quickly. But if you don't know what the estate looks like, you're pretty much going to constantly be guessing.
Yeah, so it seems like visibility is kind of our number one tip for having a good, healthy Windows 10 environment. It's just kind of actually understanding your environment. And with that, you can, you know, all the decisions are right there for you.
I absolutely agree with that. Visibility is the key.
Well, that wraps up our Windows 10 discussion. Before we go, I just want to mention, Ben, I think you're going to VMworld, right?
Absolutely, I am.
At the end of August?
August 27th, I'm going to be there. Booth 330. It's going to be great.
All right, you can find Ben there, talk to him about the podcast, talk to him about all things Lakeside.
You can talk to me about anything you want, really.
Or anything you want. All right, if you want to contact us before then, or just, you know, if you have any questions about the podcast or you want to put in ideas for episodes, feel free to email us at lifeguardit@lakesidesoftware.com. You can also tweet us at lakesidesoft. Subscribe, rate us on iTunes, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for joining us.